You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. My co-host, Veronica Rickert, will be back with me on Monday. It's Food Friday. Thanksgiving is over. Maybe you're exhausted from all the prep and the cooking went into the big feast. Maybe you're done with cooking for now. Too much work. Nobody has time on a work week. But wait, Mark Bittman, the author of the best-selling How to Cook Everything series, joins us with a fresh and fast take on cooking great food. He's a New York Times food writer, host of a PBS food series. Mark Bittman's new book is How to Cook Everything Fast. Mark, welcome to the show.
Hi, Rob. Great to be here.
Well, I laid it out a little bit there. A lot of us are juggling work, cooking for the family. Maybe we don't make time for food. So why this book on cooking fast?
Well, I think, you know, what I've found since I wrote the original How to Cook Everything is that people have basically two, well, I guess the best word is excuses for not cooking. One is they say they don't have enough time, and the other is they say they're afraid or they don't know how to do it. And, I tried to address both of these in How to Cook Everything Fast. The recipes are not only fast, obviously, but it's more than a collection of fast recipes. It's a sort of rethinking of the recipe so that anyone who takes the time and trouble to have the right ingredients can walk into their kitchen and turn on the stove and start cooking right away and get walked step by step through a recipe that's going to work. And it's a little hard to explain without visual cues, but the recipes look unlike other recipes.
Well, I was going to say that, and this is not usually the most exciting part of a cookbook, but the format is different. Can you break that down and explain a little bit about what you try to do with the format to make our cooking more efficient and faster without sacrificing the awesomeness of the food?
Nicely put. You know, we at the beginning, I got together with a team of people, and two were designers, and two were editors, and two were recipe writers and cooks, and then me. And we said, what's the dance? What's it look like when you watch people cook, and how can we describe that to non-cooks? Because current recipes don't do that. Current recipes are these weird blocks of texts that you know, you have ingredients on the left, and it would make you think that you're supposed to assemble all your chopped onions and sliced tomatoes and minced garlic and picked parsley and so on before you start cooking. But, of course, when you look at how real cooks do it, what they do is they walk in the kitchen, they put a pan on the stove, they turn on the fire, they put some olive oil in the pan, they mince some garlic, they put the garlic in the oil, then they chop up some chicken, and then so on and so forth. And that's what we do. We go through the recipe step by step as if you were cooking it. So, you know, there's always, I mean, cooking is the application of heat to food. While that heat is transforming the food from one thing to another, there's time. You always have to wait. There are no 0-minute recipes. So while you're waiting for the olive oil to warm or the garlic to turn blonde or the tomatoes to break down or the chicken to brown or whatever it is, there's always time to do other things, and that's what real cooks do. They put something in the pan, and then they get the next thing ready. It's not a get everything ready and then start cooking. It's a cook and prep at the same time, and that's how our recipes are broken down. There's cook, and there's prep, and there's cook, and there's prep, and so on down the line.
And then it's laid out real simple. The cooking, you know, turn on, you know, preheat oven or turn on the thing, black text. So while that's going, blue text, chop your garlic or whatever the step is so that it leaps out at you. Okay, I'm waiting for this thing to warm up. I can use this time efficiently to do something else now.
That's perfect. And it is two color in black and blue. And, it makes it really easy if you want to cook with someone else because you can say to them, you do the stuff that's written in blue, I'll do the stuff that's written in black or vice versa. And you already have a perfect division of labor. But it, it's also real clear what you should be doing when. You know, we this is a sort of an in-joke among cookbook writers, I guess, but one of the most frequently used words in recipe writing is meanwhile. And we determined we were not going to use the word meanwhile in this book because once you read the word meanwhile, you have done everything that you were supposed to have done meanwhile. But, yeah, anyway.
Well, let's step back a bit before we get into more of the hows of cooking fast. Let's get into the why, because a lot of times, like, okay, I don't have much time. I'll open a can of something. I'll make a sandwich. I'll pick up the rotisserie chicken. I'll call takeout. What's the advantage of not doing those things I just listed?
Well, I think the primary reason to cook is that you have control over what you eat, and that once you relinquish that control, you really don't know what's going on. So all the things you just mentioned, I mean, there's nothing wrong with any of them, you know, on a, but if you start to rely on that, you're basically outsourcing how you're fueling your body, how you're replenishing your body. And, you know, I myself would not want to relinquish that much control. And it's only cooking, it's only preparing food by yourself that really gives you full control.
And what are the benefits, then, of that control, of not, as you say, outsourcing our food preparation?
Well, the benefits are that you start with ingredients that are real food. So that if you look at the spectrum of what's sold in the supermarket, you might say 60, 70, or 80% of that stuff is not even real food. So if you want to eliminate things that have 30 ingredients and have... And then some of them are pretty strange, and we don't know what they are, and so on down the line. You need to stick to the things that really don't have labels, or they have labels with no ingredients on them, or three ingredients on them. And that's the universe of real food, and that's, I think, where more and more people want to live. And only by cooking do you really get to live in that universe.
So let's get to a point before we even hit the cutting board and turn on the oven. You look some at our pantry, what we should have, where we should have it. What are a couple of key ingredients that we should have on hand near our cooking zone?
You know, I think in a way, a good pantry has, you know, 150 ingredients in it. I mean, it's not, you know, the key things, obviously, the olive oil, lemons, Parmesan, soy sauce, vinegar, so on down the line. But when you think about it, if you're going to cook, depending on how many flavors you like and what kind of flavors, it really helps to have dozens, if not hundreds, of things in the pantry. That doesn't mean that you need to go out and buy 150 things tomorrow before you can start cooking, but it does mean that a lot of things keep for a long time, and that if you buy spices and you buy condiments and you buy basic building blocks, grains and beans and pastas and things like that, then you have that stuff at your fingertips. And even if you don't have a chance to stop at the store on the way home, you do get to cook some real food from the pantry if you have that well-stocked pantry.
One of my favorite recipes and recipe titles in the book, and this points toward how I cook, you have a recipe, cold peanut noodles with whatever you have. So you've got the basic cold peanut noodles, and you say, hey, if you got some leftover chicken, put that in, or tofu, or cashews, or whatever. So how important is that, you know, knowing how to improvise, getting a basic thing, and then playing with it with whatever you have laying around?
Well, it's important for me to know that because I'm the guy writing the recipes, and I do know that. It's less important for the people cooking the recipes because the idea is that I'm helping you. So that is, you know, cold noodles with peanut sauce, you basically need peanut butter. You're going to have noodles, probably. You know, so it's just like you have what you have there, and then whatever you want to garnish it with, as you say, cucumbers or nuts or chicken or whatever's lying around is going to be good. And beginning cooks don't know that. That's why recipes exist, because beginning cooks can't figure that out. And veteran cooks, truly veteran cooks, don't need cookbooks to be told these kinds of things. They know that. So, but that's not who I'm writing for.
Well, the bulk of your bulky book is recipes, and I want to get into a couple of those. You shared one with this orange ricotta pancakes. I think this is the one we're throwing up on the Central Time Facebook page. Could be a good post-Thanksgiving brunch. Tell us about your orange ricotta pancakes.
Well, this is, I guess there's a little in it. Some of the recipes in the book are really, really innovative. I think, we deconstructed some things and put them back together in ways that I certainly hadn't thought of before. This is a little more, it's a naturally quick recipe, but we're combining sour cream, ricotta, egg, a little bit of sugar, flour, and relying on the natural lightness of those ingredients and the natural richness of those ingredients to provide some rise and to, you know, it's a very, very, pancakes are fast anyway, but so it's a very, very quick, but quite luxurious recipe for such a simple one.
So this isn't one so much that we've saved time on the traditional pancake. We've taken, you have taken a fast recipe anyway and made it fancier, maybe a little more fulfilling, give a sense of accomplishment to it.
I think that's right. It's as I said,
It's a luxurious recipe because of the sour cream and ricotta, and it's beautiful with the orange rind. But it's not as innovative as actually the next two that we're going to talk about, I think.
Yeah, let's get to now paella. You've got a paella recipe. There is a list of foods in my head that I will happily order at a restaurant and never envision making myself. Paella, one of those foods. You've got a shrimp and tomato paella. And I'm probably saying paella wrong, but that sounds like long. Oh, good. That sounds long and complicated to me. You say, nope, 45 minutes. How do you do that?
Well, I think the first thing to think about paella, and I learned this when I went to Spain the first time, is it's basically rice with stuff in it. So if you think of rice with stuff in it, it becomes a little less intimidating. And I think we all have this weird American restaurant variation of paella in our head, which is, it has to have sausage, it has to have lobster, it has to have chicken, it has to have this, it has. In fact, it doesn't have to have anything except for rice, because what it is baked rice with stuff in it. So once you think about that, once you see it that way, I've made paella with tomatoes, I've made paella with shrimp, and this is paella with tomatoes and shrimp. There is a little bit of an innovation here, which is sort of cranking. There are two innovations here, I think. One is we warm the stock before we add it, so that that gives us a little bit of a jump start because you're not having to bring the stock up to temperature once you add it to the rice. But the second one is the oven temperature is a little higher than usual. And this does two things. It encourages a dry top, which is a nice thing in paella, and a crisp bottom, which is a very nice thing in paella. But it also makes the cooking a little bit faster. So the whole thing really is less than 45 minutes start to finish.
We're talking about great ways to cook awesome food, but, fast. And you can join the conversation. What would you like to ask Mark Bittman about cooking better, faster? Do you have some tips on ways you save time in the kitchen? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. While you're there, check out Mark's recipe for orange ricotta pancakes. We'll be back with Mark Bittman talking about his new cookbook, How to Cook Everything Fast, coming up after a look at the news with Kristen Durst. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking about smart ways to save time in the kitchen on this edition of Food Friday. We've got award-winning food writer and author Mark Bittman with us. Do you have a question for Mark about making great food without having to take too much time, more time than you have maybe to do it? Or do you have a time-saving strategy that you can share with us? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can tweet us at Central Time WPR. Mark Bittman's new cookbook is How to Cook Everything Fast. Mark, one very practical tip you give, I can't remember where I saw it in the book, take your vegetables, dice them smaller than you think. And that sounds like, it's going to take me longer to cut them smaller, but we make up the time later?
Well, everything is a trade. This is physics. There's a trade-off between surface area and cooking time. So if you take a little more time chopping, things might go a little more quickly on top of the stove. And I've taken advantage of that when it seems appropriate. In defense of not cooking fast, cooking slow can be pretty easy also, but it's a question of, do you want to wait 3 hours for things to be done? Because you can cook whole carrots, you can cook big pieces of meat, and people do, so on down the line, but that takes a lot of time. And again, I think one of the main complaints people have is that cooking takes too long.
What's your thought? My solution is often throw stuff in the crock pot in the morning, and then it's ready when I come home. I didn't look for crock pot recipes in here. Is that a problem solver for people without enough time to cook?
It is, but it's a different kind of problem solver, so it's not in here.
Gotcha.
That's kind of How to Cook Everything Lazy.
Hey, that's my book.
Maybe that's not bad.
Well, one other tip that you have is instead of thinking of your meal as three separate courses, try to come up with dishes that put everything in one pan or one pot.
Well, the old, what we used to call a casserole or the one-pot dinner is, that sounds a little corny these days, but it's still a good idea. If you can figure out a way to prepare two or three things at the same time in the same process, then you're obviously saving dishes, you're saving cleanup, you're saving time.
We're going to get into dessert in a minute, but you make a brief but impassioned case for the importance of including dessert in your cookbook. Why is that?
Well, you know, I'm not the world's biggest dessert person, but people do like dessert, and there, you know, there is something to capping off a meal with them, and they can be quick, and they can be substantial. They can make you feel like you're finished. So for all those reasons, dessert is a really terrific thing.
And that takes us to another recipe you shared with us, skillet fruit crisp. I make a lot of apple crisp because we always end up with a lot of apples in Wisconsin. I usually do it, you know, in the oven in a pan. What is unique about this skillet fruit crisp?
You know, this one is really of the three that you chose, this is the one that I think is the most representative of the spirit of the book because it's the most innovative. And, you know, many crisps, you layer apples or stone fruit or whatever it is you like in a pan, and then you make a topping and you layer that on top. And nothing wrong with that. And then you bake that. Mm-hmm. But this technique is you cook the fruit in a skillet, which is much, much faster. And meanwhile, in a second skillet, you cook a granola-like topping. So the ingredients are not really that different from a traditional crisp, but you're doing two things at once. And, you know, it doesn't take a magician to do these two things at once. They're pretty easily done at the same time. And when you're done, you have this super crisp topping that you put over your soft, freshly cooked fruit. And it's better than a traditional crisp. That is, the topping is crisper and the fruit, you have more control over the texture of the fruit because you're watching it cook. But it is also considerably faster.
That sounds really good. And you can mix up different fruits in there is the great thing.
Well, you can do that. You know, you can do that with any crisp. But what's innovative here is cooking the two things separately. And I think there are 2,000 recipes and variations in the book. And I think a third of them are probably I'm most proud of because they are innovative. We did really rethink some of these things, and we put them together in ways that I think are not only – we didn't do speed for its own sake. Mm-hmm. We did things that we thought were faster and better.
What are one or two that you're most proud of the innovations you came up with to still bring it in a timely fashion?
Well, I often say that fruit crisp when I'm asked that question, but since we've spoken –
we burned that
now,
one, yeah.
another is chicken parmesan, in which you, I mean, and I'll just talk through this because it'll take 30 seconds. You walk into the kitchen, you put a sheet pan in the oven under the broiler with some olive oil. You cut chicken breasts in half horizontally. You put the chicken breasts on the sheet pan. You cut some tomatoes into slices. You put the tomatoes on the chicken breasts, put them back in the oven. You grate some cheese and mix it with some breadcrumbs. You take the tomatoes, the chicken out with the tomatoes on it. You put the cheese and breadcrumb mixture on top of there. While that's crisping up and the chicken is finishing cooking, you pick some basil. You throw that on there for 30 seconds and you're done. And what you have, I don't think I've forgotten any ingredients. What you have is fully cooked chicken because you cut it in half, so it cooked more quickly, with kind of melted tomatoes, not really tomato sauce, but kind of nicely juicy melted tomatoes, and a topping that's both crisp and chewy because it has breadcrumbs and parmesan and mozzarella in it, and not overcooked basil. And I think, you know, it's a little bit of a – it's not a fire drill. There's a little bit of scrambling going on in that recipe, but it's a lot of fun, and it's less than 30 minutes, and it's really, really good chicken parmesan. And it's different. It's reinvented, and I'm quite proud of that.
We heard from Marsha on Facebook. She says, we're part of the slow food, grow your own local food culture. My tip, Marsha says, is to make a menu for the week because thawing things from our freezer is the thing that makes cooking for ourselves seem to take too long. So maybe take the time to cook when you have the time and store it for later is one solution there, Mark.
Yeah, well, the Sunday strategy, the cook as much as you can Sunday strategy is a great one, and it's a good time to make stock or to make a pot of beans or a pot of grains, and those will keep in the refrigerator all week, and you've got them to call upon whenever you need them.
Well, can you tell us a great starter recipe? Say we've got a total novice, little intimidated, like you were talking about earlier, by the existence of the kitchen, a good recipe for them to try. Low failure rates, they'll get it right and maybe take the next step from there.
I think they're all low failure rates, but I think, you know, the way that you Rob, were impressed by the paella thing. I think that makes it a great starting place because it is a recipe that will work. It's impressive. It sounds much grander than it really is, and it's super delicious.
Well, I think I am inspired. I will try to make this rice with stuff in it that we call paella. Mark, yeah. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Rob. Happy Thanksgiving.
And to you, too. We've been
talking to
Mark Bittman on this edition of Food Friday. He is a well-known food writer, New York Times columnist. He's the author of a lot of cookbooks. His new one, the one we've been talking about, it's called How to Cook Everything Fast. We've got a great orange ricotta pancake recipe on the Central Time Facebook page.